Hi, this is Carrie Jones, and I'm here with Emily Wilcox. Today is January 30th, 2019, and we are in Inman 205 with Jennifer Kroll. She is a social worker here at Belmont. Her position is an associate professor. And so we're just going to go ahead and ask her a couple questions. So just to start, can you tell us a little bit about what the average day in your profession looks like?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it would be hard to define what the average day is like out of context. Social work as a profession is somewhat hard to define and a little bit hard to kind of wrap your arms around, at least at the outset. Most of us specialize in serving a particular population, and so because of that, our day-to-day might look different depending on the clients that we encounter and serve every day, and also the context in which we do it or the practice setting that we find ourselves in. So social workers can work in hospitals, in medical practices and clinics, which makes us a good fit in many ways for the College of Health Sciences where we are here at Belmont. But we also can work in nonprofits serving military and veteran families, mental health, behavioral mental health supports. We can work in macro practice settings that do more community organizing, legislative and policy analysis, advocacy, and kind of everything in between. Obviously, child welfare is something that we're very known for. I say it last because it's a bit of a stereotype. There are a large number of us that work in the child welfare system, but the vast majority of professional social workers serve in and around behavioral mental health. Mm-hmm. But again, that runs the gamut of, you know, kids and families and new mamas and daddies all the way up to older adults. So it's kind of hard to say what the day in the life is. It might just depend on where you, who you're serving and where you find yourself serving them.
So. Okay. So why did you decide to go into social work compared to another health profession, or did you have something else in mind before you went into social work?
That's a great question too. I did actually. I initially wanted to be to work as a counselor of some kind. And so when I was in my undergraduate program, I actually have a major, a degree in psychology. And my plan was to kind of pursue that through to the end. But I was torn. I have a minor in sociology, and I had kind of at one point in time thought about law school, issues around social justice and kind of the systemic nature of social problems that people encountered really fascinated me, and kind of thinking about how do individuals maintain wellness in the face of like oppressive social forces, poverty, lack of access to care, those kinds of things. Made engaging at the individual level always kind of challenging for me. I felt like, oh, is this kind of fruitless? Am I just spinning my wheels if I'm not also tackling kind of the system in which people find themselves? And it made sense that that was frustrating given my context at the time. As a psychologist, we were focused on the science of the mind and the study of the brain and not really focused on the environment that those minds and brains sometimes find themselves in. Everybody has their specialty, and that just wasn't mine at the time. So when I took a break and got a job after school, I learned more about social work as a potential option and kind of chose that path for graduate school and deviated a bit from psychology. And then when I got there, I fell in love with, again, kind of leaning into that systems piece and that systems thinking and feeling like I might find more professional satisfaction and even personal satisfaction in tackling problems upstream is kind of the metaphor that I use. So not just pulling people out of the river, but really thinking about why they were dropping in the first place. And so I switched gears and left my focus on clinical social work practice to more political advocacy and community organizing.
Okay.
But my when I did practice before I switched gears, I did I worked in clinics, medical, reproductive health clinics. So that was also really fascinating because it was a great incubator to see how individual problems that women in particular were encountering were, you know, with the stroke of a pen, fixable with the different legislation, policy, funding that would, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But that's kind of why I switched gears a bit of my professional journey.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So, just going off of your past experience and then where you are right now, what's been the most rewarding part of your career this far?
Oh my goodness, that is such a great question too. I think I would be remiss if I didn't say teaching. I mean, that's definitely obviously what I felt called to do. Moving out of direct practice and into education was something that I was really passionate about doing. And I have really enjoyed introducing people to social work. I teach the introductory classes at the BSW level, the Bachelor of Social Work level. So to encounter 18, 19, 20-year-olds who have no idea what the profession that I've devoted my life to is a really neat experience, especially if they subsequently feel called to engage in that kind of work as future colleagues. It's a really, really neat, cool part of my job. And the mentoring and advocacy that we get to do in partnership and with students here is really, really neat. And then when I was a direct practitioner, I think the work that I did in the clinic with the young women and the knowledge that I was able to bring to bear in terms of supporting them as individuals, but also using those individual stories to advocate for change at the political or legislative level was really, really rewarding too. So I love, I don't do it anymore, but I love still thinking about it and talking about it in the classroom. So it's kind of the glory days. But that's what I used to do. Now I get to hang out with 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds and tell them what a social worker is. Which is, you know, again, it's the coolest part of my job. It also happens to be one of the most frustrating parts, but it's very cool.
Yeah. So whenever you were in the clinic and you were working in the field, about how many times on average did you come into contact or work with like a pharmacist in general?
Well, that I think because of my context, it was super unique. So I would say daily, because we were managing their health, their physical health, not just their mental and behavioral health. Now, and I should say contact daily. Maybe I had direct contact or daily contact rather with the profession. So with thinking through what kind of medications you were prescribed, having a very basic and uber modest understanding of some of the interactions of those, kind of thinking through, for example, different things that you might take that would make birth control not as effective, like oral contraceptives. That was something we did a lot of education around. So, and connecting them with their pharmacists and supports and saying, if you want to take this and this and this, just make sure that's okay. So I didn't have like a human necessarily that a pharmacist that I connected with daily, but I definitely had contact with the profession on a daily basis, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could go back to when you were actually practicing in a, like that setting, what would be something that you would say pharmacists could do to help improve the interactions that you guys had every day?
Yeah. I might not even use myself as an example. My husband actually is also a clinical social worker. He practices currently. He works for the National Guard. And he talks a lot about having to do some education on his own time around the medications that people take to manage, again, their mental and behavioral health, mm-hmm. and different kind of things that may counteract one another, or that where one provider isn't talking to the other provider, and sort of he being the gateway and sort of trying to understand how that might manifest behaviorally for his clients. Like, okay, if you're on these series of medications and these, this may actually not be a mental health crisis. It may be a physiological crisis based upon the combinations of medications that you're taking or the way in which you're complying with the medication regimens that you've been prescribed. So if you stopped one and started another or didn't have financial access to be able to take it, you know, in a way that is compliant. I think that's something that I have said to him, you should just go talk to a pharmacist. And he's like, who? You know, because there's not one in his practice. It's not like he has access to one on a daily basis where he works, because he works on a military base. But I have often said, like, we should make friends with a pharmacist. you should talk to them and ask them about, like, the medications that you see most regularly pop up in this assessments that you do with your clients and what that looks like behaviorally if there are compliance issues or if there are interactive effects that may result in depression, anxiety, or just unpredictable behavior that might look like something else that gets flagged especially in the military, as a concern. Like, oh, mm-hmm. you should go see behavioral health because you're not acting quite like yourself. And that could be a result of just medication mismanagement or a lack of understanding on the part of the client. So that's probably a better, more relevant example than my long ago practice experience, if that makes any sense.
So in your experience, or just in general, what do you think we as pharmacists could do in the future to help improve, like, the interactions between maybe not just social work, but, like, you know, throughout the professional atmosphere in general?
Oh, that's a great question. Goodness. I'm not sure. I mean, I think this kind of thing is a great start. Kind of a few years ago when the push at universities across the country kind of began to do a better job of educating health professions in particular interprofessionally, I heard someone say, the first time that we meet one another as professionals shouldn't be over the bed of a very sick person. You know, that we should be walking into the room with some sense of camaraderie and at least very general appreciation of what the skill set we each bring to the table. And I do think that that's improved a lot on all of our parts. So I don't know that I would be so bold as to make suggestions for what pharmacists could or should do, other than just to continue to have an awareness of the fact that, especially people who work in behavioral and mental health, we assess for the medications that our clients take, but we don't always know what that means. And I think that the burden of that is as much ours to bear as it is other professions. It's just sort of, well, who could we contact? How do we better communicate with each other about, again, kind of how that manifests itself in the life of an individual, especially as it relates to their, well, you know, their mental health. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah,
but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's perfect. Okay. And that's actually all the questions that we have for you. So
great.
Thank you so much for taking the
time
to meet
with
us. We really appreciate
it. No problem. Yeah.